Premiership. We are obviously in international break season at the moment, but coming back, Norwich City in particular have a block of 8 games which are going to decide their fate for this season and most likely beyond as well. We've narrowed it down to 5 teams. We're going to have a good old conversation about the hunt, Norwich City's role in it in particular. It's going to be hopefully going to be, I should say this at the end rather than the start, but it's hopefully going to be a fairly in-depth look at what there is to come, and I'll show you how in-depth it is. I've actually produced some sort of research for it, which is an advance on what we usually do on the podcast. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinker.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with Coleman's of Norwich. We are in a different location. We are in the Fat Cat and Canary here in Norwich, and thank you very much to them for letting us film in here and record in here. And we've got some very special Pinker glasses as well, which you've been wanting for a while, haven't you, Paddy? And we've even got, I've spoken about a yellow and green sofa before. We've not quite got those, but yellow and green cushions in here. And there's various Norwich City paraphernalia around here as well, which is good. I'm Connor Southwell. Full gang joining us this week. Adam Harvey, Paddy Davitt and Samuel Seaman to look ahead to this run of games. And of course, I'll read it out in case, you've not looked at a championship table for a little while. It's current standings are this. 5th place, West Brom on 66 points. 6th place, Norwich City with 61 points. Those two have both played 38 games. And then 7th, having played 37 games, Hull City on 58 points. 8th, FA Cup semi-finalist Coventry City on 57 points. And Preston in 9th on 56 points. Obviously, you could include Middlesbrough and Cardiff, but I feel like if you include those, you end up including half the championship. So no disrespect to those guys, and they may well form part of the conversation as well, but just purely for the purposes of this show, really, we limited it to 5. We'll look very silly if Middlesbrough or Cardiff get in, but hey-ho, that's life. Paddy, how would you assess it? Because from a Norwich City perspective, they're in the top 6. It's taken them a significant period of time to get in there and to turn around what was a very sticky autumn. 8 games left. There is a sense, I think, amongst everyone of this is very achievable, very doable. It feels like minds are very focused at the moment, both internally and externally, about the job ahead.
Yeah, I mean, David said it after, I'm going to say it was the game before the last one, the home game. And the big win over Rotherham, when I think that was when they went into the top 6 that day. And he, of course, said, at this stage, It's not necessarily the be-all and end-all. You want to be there when the dust settles in terms of regular season. But I think it is quite big at this point now, because psychologically, and particularly now, they've then followed up what they did against Rotherham at Stoke. Very comprehensive win, fully deserved, excellent performance. Hull and Cov not in league action last weekend, and now there's a 2-week break. So, I would much rather be now in Norwich's position where they're in the top 6 rather than a Hull, a Cov, a Preston, who've got to kind of know that there's no margin for error now for those clubs, because they're playing catch-up. Me and Sam did a Pinker app Q&A last Monday, and it's like from being the hunter, they are now the hunted, and that's a different mindset. But you get the sense with this group of players, the experience that's in there, and we'll get into that in due course, I don't think they will necessarily be perturbed by that. It won't affect them, I don't think, at all. It will really impact them at all. I think there's enough experience in that dressing room now that hopefully, I think Ashley Barnes said it, didn't he, that if they're sensing blood now, they've got to go for it and be ruthless and not let the others back in now. I think they've timed their run perfectly, and now it's just about staying in the moment. Bit of luck with injuries, of course, and hopefully, they will navigate a path now, I feel, to the top 6, and then it will be playoff football. So, yeah, it's a huge testament, because, we're kind of going back to the last podcast recorded, from where they've found themselves sort of October, November to now is so good. And it's a testament to Wagner's coaching staff, all the backroom team and those players, that they've found something within themselves to put together this level of consistency. And now, having seen this over, 23 games pretty much since that Cardiff one, it's very hard to construct an argument now that it's going to implode, and that, barring, as I say, keep stressing, a key player missing through injury, and the one we're all thinking about is probably Josh Sargent, really, given his impact since he came back. But other than that, I really don't see where the pitfalls are in terms of these other clubs and what they can do, because ultimately now, if Norwich continue on this vein, it doesn't matter what those clubs do because they won't catch up. So great position to be in, and really sets it up now for what's going to be, and you know, looking at, and we'll get into it now, some of the teams Norwich have got to play as well, particularly one in particular. Fantastically exciting. If you're a Norwich fan, you bet you can't wait now. You're counting the days to Plymouth, the other side of this international break.
Yeah, and the international break timing, I think, Sam, you can look at either way. You could say it's come at a bad time because they had a really good, sort of felt like they had a lot of momentum. And that's not to say that you head into a break and it disappears, because that might not be the case. But you want to prolong that for as long as you're in it. So I think there's probably a part of the Norwich City squad and David Wagner who probably would have wanted a game this weekend or in midweek after particularly the highs of that Stoke game. But equally, it has allowed them and will allow them to get some players back. Shane Duffy probably going to be the only one maybe who comes back for injury for that Plymouth game on Good Friday. But it allows them, you know, Paddy mentioned Josh Sargent, to rest him, and there are others in that squad as well, just to I guess give them a little bit of a breather. Obviously, for the lads away on international duty, that doesn't transpire, and you obviously end up crossing your fingers as ever. But timing wise, I mean, it could be argued that this is a good time to have an international break or not. So where do you kind of sit on that?
Yeah, I think they'll try and see it as a block of games that they can now go and attack. I know you asked Shane Duffy and John Rowe earlier this week about the idea of maybe looking at it as, you know, now this block of games and compartmentalising it into going to attack those. And the way that often managers speak about how they set up for those things, you hear them talk about having points targets for certain weeks or certain periods of time, and you get the sense that they might benefit from that. I know a lot of the time this season, especially when things have been going well for Norwich, we've been talking about the timing and maybe not wanting to give themselves too much room to maybe run out of steam. And I actually think in that sense, although at one point it felt like maybe they had peaked slightly too early, they've managed to carry it on to the extent to which I think they've actually got into the playoff places at just the right time. I think it was, you know, what, 10 games left of the season that they actually finally got into that top six. And for me, that feels like a really good period of time. So, although, as you said, it does feel like maybe they've lost some momentum a little bit, it also stems the flow of that constant game time that the likes of Sargent obviously were having to deal with, and the rest that they all had. I can't imagine he was, well, obviously Wagner said post-Stoke that he hasn't had a full week of training, and there was probably a lot of short-term management going on that maybe wasn't sustainable without this break. So in that sense, I think there are a few reasons why it's positive. It feels to me like that it probably is overall positive, even when you weigh it up against that sort of minor loss of momentum. So yeah, I think it allows them to now look forward to this really exciting period, and I think overall it's probably come at a fairly decent time.
And it's the psychological aspect as well, isn't it, Adam? There was a lot of conversation about this after Stoke. You're obviously not just in the top six, but you've got a 3-point cushion, even with the games in hand. And the old adage goes, you know, you'd rather have points on the board than the games in hand. Obviously, it's only Hull that could catch up to Norwich, but Norwich now have, as Paddy referenced, a significantly improved goal difference over them as well. And I think you showed me a statistic earlier about how goal difference has been pretty pivotal in the race. I think it was last year, 2020, and there was another one as well, wasn't it, which isn't on my sheet of stats that I've produced. But that psychological advantage, particularly when you look at Hull and you know, the fact that they've come into this break off the back of four straight draws, one of those against Leicester, one very disappointing one against Birmingham before that. Having spent so long in the top six, with now a cushion, as Paddy says, it just changes the psychology for Norwich City to be the team that everyone's trying to chase, rather than being the team that's doing the chasing, which is something that they struggled with last season in this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, the goal difference is almost worth an extra point come the end of the season. And, you know, I think, as I said, yeah, I think it's three of the last, in the recent decade, there's been three teams that have missed out on goal difference come the end of the final game of the season and the final whistle. So it's crucial for Norwich that they have sort of bolstered that goal difference in the last couple of games. You know, they've put 8 goals on their tally, and you know, it's now sort of put them quite a long way ahead of Hull. And I think Hull are on +7 and Norwich are on +14 or 15, so they're in a pretty strong position there. But yeah, I think for Hull, you look at their kind of upcoming games as well. You know, Leeds away, they've not lost at home all season. Cardiff away, we know what they've done to Ipswich the other week. They're a side that are still just about hanging into the race, so they might still be fancying their chances. So I think, yeah, psychologically it's all now there for Norwich, and you kind of feel like the next game is so big, and that's kind of the way the rest of the season is going to go now. It is 8 finals, and they've kind of got to manage those, navigate it and deal with the pressure, but that will probably put them in good stead then for when it comes to those big games, if they do make the playoffs. You know, it is all about who can sort of cope with the pressure in those sort of high intensity games, particularly in a semi-final where it's you know, it can be decided by one moment. And you know, we've kind of seen in recent times Norwich got the players that can produce those moments. So yeah, I think it's all there to be played for, which of course is which is, you know, good looking forward from a Norwich City fan perspective that they've got the opportunity.
Yes, it is, and it's funny, isn't it? Because the fixtures come out in what, when do they come out? June time, and you know, I to be honest find it a little bit. I know it gets hyped up, but I find it a bit of a non-event. You play every team twice, but you get to this stage of the season, and suddenly you find yourself looking at fixtures and trying to analyse it a little bit. So I guess it's maybe the reverse effect of that. But it is interesting how it's kind of poisoned. It always is in the Championship, isn't it, Paddy? And you know, you find, as Adam has done there, you look at when Hull have got Leeds, or you look at when Coventry have got a double header of Leeds, and then Southampton, they've still got Ipswich to play, Preston still got Leicester to play, Southampton to play, Norwich obviously to play within that as well, and even Norwich having obviously the Easter Monday away trip to Leicester, and then obviously the Ipswich reverse, but they're running otherwise looks okay. And actually, you know, we'll speak a little bit more about this in depth later, but I've kind of calculated the average position of the opponents that these five teams have to face. West Brom have slightly, but they've got kind of the best running on paper, if you want to use that expression. So there will be, I guess, Norwich fans, West Brom fans, Hull fans, Coventry fans, Preston fans, looking at these fixtures, looking at potential weeks where it can turn. I can appreciate maybe you've just had a slight glance at it, but even just with the fixtures laid out here, you can see certain weekends where maybe there's going to be a swing, and that's the way you have to think. I guess for the challenges for the respective coaches and squads of these teams is trying not to feed into that. That has to be external, doesn't it? You have to possess a very different mentality internally.
Yeah, and that's when you're drawing on your experienced players who probably at various points in their career have been through these situations. I'd have to go away and have a look. I'm sure Ashley Barnes obviously was a title winner with Burnley last season, but that was a bit of a romp in the end. But he will have been through previously, maybe with Burnley, these type of scenarios. I'm sure Shane Duffy has had that. Jack Stacey springs to mind. I'm sure with Bournemouth, he came out of this division, didn't he? So it's invaluable. It really is. But on that point, it's funny enough, as you were talking there, kind of, again, Sam and myself did a Q&A the other day, not this week, the week before, and pre-Stoke. I think one of the questions was, here's Norwich's run in, how many points did they get? And I had a look, actually, before we recorded today, and I put Stoke down for a draw, so that shows, A, I know nothing, which is no great revelation, and B, how unpredictable it is. I mean, I had them on 73 points over the entire...
Totally.
Yeah, from Stoke onwards. Which would, I think, really, you know, be saying close to the wind, given your stats.
It would be
yeah.
Tight. Yeah.
But of course, now they're even on my ill-informed measure, they're 2 points better than that, because they got three at Stoke instead of one. So that probably underlines the point, really. Well, I think we could all do that exercise and try and guess or guesstimate how many points Norwich get from these remaining games. And you know, you while you may get near the points tally, I think the actual makeup of the, you know, where they get the points, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we all took do that exercise now, and then we put them pieces of paper back in front of us after the Birmingham final game. I think there'd be a very unlikely any of us would have got it spot on. So, yeah, it's fun though. It's fun to sort of see where the potential slip. Yeah, yeah. Well, if you come out the right side of it,
yeah.
If you come out the right side of it, but. Well, that's interesting, because you can guarantee there'll be people attached to Hull, whether internally or externally. Hull, Cov and Preston will be looking where Norwich are going to slip up and where they can make the points up. And West Brom, I guess, slightly less fraught. They've got a 5-point cushion on Norwich. But even, I'm sure, if you're Corberan, you're probably looking at one or two potential banana skins. And it's the psychology of it now, isn't it? And particularly if you're a head coach, it's the psychological element with your players. And I think that's why David routinely has gone with the, look, we win, I don't care what other teams do. And that, if you boil it down, is pretty much where Norwich have gone to now. But easier said than done. But if the players can take that on board and do basically just worry about their own level of performance and the next opponent in front of them, it really doesn't matter what the other teams are doing. You know, they're not in a catch-up situation now. So that blinkers approach, I think, is the way to go. If you're in the Norwich camp right now, yeah, of course, if you're Hull, Cov and Preston, you need Norwich to stumble. So you would definitely be taking a very close eye on Norwich's running and where you feel. And of course, I'm sure their eyes, as ours are, would be drawn to Leicester, Ipswich. They're the crux of the matter, aren't they? I mean, without breaching any confidences, you know, we had a fortunate to have a little chat with Ashley Barnes a few weeks back, and this is obviously two or three games ago. And even then, from a player's point of view, they were looking at it and not dismissing any of the other opponents on the run-in, but they felt as well, I think, as a group, they're the two standout games on the run-in. So, you know, they will take care of themselves, but I think you have to be just mindful that it isn't just about, you know, going to Leicester and then hosting Ipswich and maybe coming away unbeaten, or, you know, even better than that, because there's plenty of the potential to slip up, and they can't afford that, even though they're in a relatively strong position because they've got the points on the board now. But anybody was looking up, for instance, I'm looking down now, Swansea and Bristol City home, back-to-back Carrow Road, before you go to Birmingham away, and thinking, well, that's 9 points. Any season you want to, whether it's through a Norwich prism or generally, you know, that end of the season, particularly when you've got scenarios like Birmingham, could need points that final day to stay up. The reality is all bets are off, and that's why it's so exciting, because it is still all to play for, and it is still, while feeling that Norwich are on a good path, still very unpredictable.
Yeah, and you referenced it there, and I think, you know, and again, I spoke about kind of this average opponent position. Norwich is just below, or just under 13.13, which is certainly, again, on paper, the second kind of kindest running of the five teams. Preston next, then it goes to Coventry, and then Hull. Certainly on paper, and of the teams they have to face, have the toughest run in on paper. But as Brian Clough, wasn't it? And football's played on grass, not paper, etc. So, what does that add? Maybe not much, because as you said there, even Sheffield Wednesday away, and I know they got beaten 6-0 at Portman Road, and I think Danny Royal probably admitted tactically he went for that maybe in a slightly naive way, but prior to that they'd won 5 from 7. That's not going to be routine. Preston, again, similar kind of target, and they will view that game, particularly being at home against Norwich City, you know, probably considered at the moment on the fringes of the conversation. Well, if they can beat Norwich, then again they close that gap. You know, Swansea have improved under Luke Williams since he's taken over. Liam Manning at Bristol City has been a little bit indifferent. Norwich only just beat them in the reverse game. Plymouth, you've got a coach who's under pressure. Birmingham, as you mapped out, are fighting off relegation. There's so much still in play here, and that's the case for every team. And Sam, as we look at it here, and we think about the race more broadly, out of the teams on the sheet, and I guess we're probably looking at, if I certainly feel West Brom maybe probably won't get dragged into this, but as you said, it's famous last words on these things. They've certainly haven't looked like that to be the case. So if we're looking at maybe a four-team run for sixth, I said you've got Middlesbrough and Cardiff as well, who I don't think you can discount in this crazy, crazy league. Which one, from a Norwich City perspective, are you looking at and going, they're the ones that worry me, they're the ones that I think could, if there's any team capable of closing the gap and causing problems, I think it's them?
I think Hull, for me. I think if you look at the quality of the teams and how well they've played when we've seen Norwich play against them, and just when I've watched them this season, it feels like, for me, Hull and Coventry are probably Norwich and Hull and Coventry are all very close in terms of the quality of their teams. I think Liam Rossina and Mark Robbins are both excellent coaches as well, but the fine margin for me is just obviously Coventry have that slight distraction of Wembley and the FA Cup semi-final, and it feels like the road is maybe slightly clearer for Hull to go on and focus on this playoff run-in. Obviously, they have very, very similar quality of opponent. What is it? It's 11.77 for Coventry and 11.44 for Hull. So, I feel like that's very close. Probably that game between Hull and Coventry on April the 23rd is going to have huge bearing if Norwich haven't quite managed to pull away, which you suggest would be difficult given they have got those Leicester and Ipswich games. It feels to me like it will come down to those two, that game, in terms of who of those two finishes higher up the table. And then for me, it's Norwich sort of competing with whoever out of those two does the best, really. I think Preston, although I know you said they have got sort of the second best after, obviously, well, West Brom have the best, but in terms of those four, Preston when you average it out, have the best fixtures. I feel like Norwich and Southampton back-to-back, then the brief respite of QPR, but straight back in with Leicester and West Brom back-to-back, is actually really, really tough. And it feels like they've got almost the most up and down
running. I think their next four, and I'll map it out, they've got Rotherham at home, Birmingham away, Watford away, which again is difficult, just changed manager. Again, well, you have to take that with, and Huddersfield as well, who, if you took the first half of that West Brom game, were excellent, the second half not so much. But those four games in particular, before they play Norwich, feel like a good opportunity to get a decent points all there.
Yeah, and I think they'll build confidence from that. But it feels to me like there might be that worry where Norwich fans will probably see Preston doing very well at the same time that they're facing Leicester and Ipswich, and that might be a little bit of a concern. But
I mean, final five as well, Norwich, Southampton, much improved QPR, Leicester, West Brom. So it's decent for the next four and then very tough final five.
Yeah, theirs is the most sort of up and down for me. It's like they've only got fairly simple games and very difficult games, which I think is quite contrasting to the rest of the race, which seems to be like every team has their sort of fair sample and spread of middling games and easier ones and more difficult ones. So I think it's worth maybe trying to stay a little bit calm if Preston do go and have that very positive run, because you look at those last games of the season and, you know, Norwich and Southampton, they could very easily be coming away from that with two losses, then going into QPR away from home, which, as you say, is a much more difficult task now. And if they go into that with the lack of confidence provided by possibly two losses, might not get a result there, and then they have to go to Leicester and West Brom, having struggled to win for the last three games. I know there's a lot of hypotheticals involved there, but, you know, whatever way you look at it, it is going to be a difficult one for them, and keeping the confidence up for those last five games when all the other teams will be incredibly focused and desperate to get results, I think will be difficult. So for me, it is between Hull and Coventry. But when you look at how level this sort of run-in is now, it feels like, it's a bit of a toss-up at the moment.
Yeah, and as we said, Adam, so much of this, particularly in this eight-game clump, is going to be about form, consistency, relentlessness, probably a little bit of luck as well, and that's on the injury front, but also obviously in-game luck as well. And you look at the form, and obviously we've spoken about Norwich City over the last 10 games, an average points per game rate of two, which is, you know, the one that you want, really, particularly across the season. If you can achieve that, maybe not this season, but any other season would usually end in top two, a top two finish. West Brom have 2.1. Then you're going down to Hull at 1.9, but they've drawn their last four, as we've discussed. Then on to Preston at 1.8, and then Cov at 1.7. I mean, that shows how tight the margins are in terms of form. These are all five teams, but in particular, I guess, the three behind Norwich. Norwich are in better form at the moment, but they're in no means bad form as well. So that shows the importance from a Norwich perspective of consistency, particularly as we look ahead, to, as many Norwich fans will be doing, to that double header, that Easter Monday trip to Leicester, and obviously an East Anglian derby. May well end up being a warm-up of how the playoffs actually go. Hopefully that's not the case. Well, hopefully it is the case, but sort of not the case. I don't know, it's difficult. We'll come back onto that later. And it goes back to the heart of what we started this podcast really with, not from a Norwich City perspective. It is a case of, if they can continue what they're doing over this run of form, it's theirs to lose, isn't it, essentially?
That's why I felt the Stoke result was so big for kind of the mindset of the players, the coaches, the fans, because there had been one stumbling block in kind of this Norwich upturn of form, and that had been the away results. You know, they had missed plenty of opportunities over that run. You know, you go to Blackburn and you only pick up a point where, you know, they hadn't been, well, they were in poor form, and that was the kind of game where you felt Norwich had to pick up all 3 points. They went to QPR, who, yes, they were improved, but the fact Norwich went 2-1 up in that game quite late on, and sort of it's just about managing the game and getting the 3 points. They failed to do that, and it, you know, I think that kind of plays in the back of your head. You know, they've got some tough away games still to come. Preston, Sheffield Wednesday are fighting for something, Leicester, of course, and even Birmingham on the final day. You know what, Birmingham potentially could be fighting a relegation battle on that day. So away form was kind of huge to upturn that. They've managed to do that with the Stoke result, and I think that's maybe helped the confidence amongst the fan base. You feel it a little bit on socials after that result. You know, it felt like kind of a real turning point again. And of course, the home form's been great, but it's just a case of keeping that up. Thankfully, when Swansea and Bristol City comes to town, hopefully they're both kind of on the beach a little bit and they've maybe got less to play for. But I think from Norwich City perspective, it's kind of the fact they've already played a game more than the three sides behind them. You know, you look at kind of the run-ins at those sides. They're going to have to try and fit another midweek game in. You know, that obviously puts extra workload on those players. Coventry have got a distraction in terms of the FA Cup as well, which, you know, a glamour tie against Manchester United at Wembley could potentially, you know, could that be a distraction to those individuals? It might be a motivation, but I think, you know, given kind of the intensity of a championship run-in for the playoffs, an FA Cup semi-final is also a huge, you know, momentous moment for those players, and that might be a distraction. So I think Norwich are in the box seat, and it's all up to them now and how they manage it. But I'd fancy their chances based on the opposition they've got, and I think if they navigate / play the way they've been playing and continue, you know, sort of the way they've been approaching games, I think they've probably got enough there to sneak into that sixth place. And obviously we know what the playoffs is like in terms of the lottery element of it. I know, I mean, you were kind of speaking a little bit earlier on about kind of the statistics. I think Blackpool were the last team to go up in sixth place, so that was 2010. So it's not really a particularly, you know, if you look at kind of recent times, it's not been the best place to finish in terms of six. But, you know, we know these players, as Paddy kind of alluded to at the start, there's a lot of them that have been involved in these situations. They know how to manage it. And you maybe look at that compared to kind of the Leicesters that are expected to go up if they drop out into the playoffs, or even Leeds. You know, I mean, I know Farker's kind of got promoted before, but he's never been through a playoff kind of battle before. So it's Wagner's done it. So, I think that all comes into play, and it puts Norwich in a pretty strong position.
Yeah, I mean, Sam spoke about Hull. You spoke more generally. I wanted to ask you about Coventry, Paddy, because it's interesting. I've got sort of the Opta statistics. So this is a percentage that they've calculated in terms of likelihood of finishing inside the top six. So they've given West Brom, as things stand, I think as most people would expect, as we've kind of debated, they've given them a 96.4% chance of finishing inside the top six. Norwich are then next, 47.7, so just under a 50% chance of a top six finish. But then interestingly, and this I say interestingly because the points, Coventry are behind Hull on points. They've played the same game. But they are given a significantly higher percentage of getting into that top six than Hull are. I mean, Coventry, from Opta's calculations, have a 34.2%. Then at Hull dropped to 13.5% chance of getting into the top six, which, given they've got a game in hand, which if they win, they'd be level on points with Norwich City. We've obviously spoken about the difference in goal difference. I mean, it's quite a dramatic. I mean, it's more than double the chance that Hull have got, and then you drop down to Preston on 7%. Adam's obviously referenced the FA Cup semi-final, and I think there is an element maybe of laziness around that. Of, it could be a distraction, and of course it could be, because it's such a significant day. And I know Mark Robbins has obviously spoken about how stretched their squad is at the moment as well, but I think he's shown over his time at Coventry that you can't bet against him or that group of players to achieve anything. So do you agree with Opta, which essentially is saying at the moment that Coventry are Norwich City's biggest competitors, for a place in that top six, and I guess that sixth spot?
Well, I'm not going to say anything different, am I? But that's probably not based on any statistical.
Do you think that percentage is Mark Robbins?
Well, what I can tell you is they came like the proverbial train this time last year to sneak into the playoffs. Really, although I think they might have just finished fifth, if memory serves me, but
only by a point, though.
Only just, yeah. And then they emerged through the playoffs. Obviously, went, you know, within a penalty kick in the Premier League. So, yeah, that probably is the Robbins factor, but also a lot of those players as well. I know there was a bit of a turnaround at the top end of the pitch, but a lot of the same core elements are in that squad. So, if you are looking at it in terms of suitability or probability, then yeah, you've got to take that into a fact, because that was only this time last season. So, you know, I would probably look at it more in terms of, although, I mean, the stats would say different, because the stats say there's very little in terms of the average opponent's position between the two. Points per game is very similar at the minute. So it would be interesting to know why there is that marked divergence in terms of the modelling statistically. But that's how I feel. I feel Cov will be their main. And you know, maybe there's one stat actually my eye is drawing to, and that might have played into the Opta stat, and that's, you look at the last five. Hull have won one of the last five, so their form line is tracking in the wrong direction, really. Cov had two defeats in that, but they've won three games. So, you know, over the last small sample of games, one of those two teams is really putting their foot forward, And that might be it. That might be it. Allied to, obviously, I'm sure these number crunchers look at the run-ins, but...
Five home games as well, Cov. Yeah. Hull have got four. Maybe that's an element.
Exactly, yeah. But I think, to me, the one I would pull out on the stats in front of us is that. And that's quite alarming, if I'm not anything to do with Hull, that they've only won one of the last five. And then probably, if you drill down, there's reasons for that. But, I mean, Leicester, they played one of them games, didn't they? So, and they were a bit unfortunate.
Draw against Birmingham, yeah.
Yeah, but still, at this stage of the season, for a team with top six aspirations, you don't really want to be on that type of run. I mean, they might turn it and flip it and say, well, they're unbeaten in five. Well, that's true, but it's not really enough to be drawing games at this stage, particularly when you've got other clubs like Norwich who are putting their foot to the floor a little bit and, you know, really churning out the wins now and scoring a lot of goals in the process. So, yeah, no, I'm trying to put my Cov allegiance to one side. I would think Cov are their main threat.
Do you think the semi-final will play much of a part and the distraction? Because, again, we know what Mark Robbins is like as a character. He's, how do I put this politely, quite grounded. And you know, he's not, as he said, to be fair, after Wolves, he's not someone that that shows a huge amount of emotion. Surely he's not going to be a guy that's letting his squad think about a game that's going to take place in, when is it, April 20th? Yeah. 20th, yeah. You know, and they've got, what, 3 days later, they've got Hull at home. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's it feels unlikely that, and particularly at the moment, obviously they're riding crest for a wave at the moment. I'm sure you may be in a better place to talk about that than anyone. But he doesn't feel like the type of character that's going to let mine sort of wander.
No, he won't. He won't. And you know, I was watching it the other night. They're kind of equivalent of the City View, you know, behind the scenes from the Wolves.
What's that called? Sky Blue something?
Unseen, I think it's called, yeah. Okay. Although it's not unseen because you're getting tucked behind the... But anyway, but...
Did they have him celebrating in the ball boy's face?
They didn't include that, Colin. No. Let's not peddle that national narrative. Gary O'Neill, poor hard done by. But
disgraceful, I saw one headline. Yeah, that's a bit strong.
Yeah, well, yeah. It wasn't great, was it? And he apologised immediately. But moving that on, unusually in that footage, Robbins allowed the Cov media to actually film in the dressing room and what the speech he gave to the players after the game, immediately after the game at Molineux, where they've obviously, you know, for some of those players, that's probably a career high, and another one to come at Wembley. And it was very much that. It was very much in his kind of, in the nicest possible way, his dour, deadpan kind of delivery that he perfects. It was part of that. That's not what the priority is now. It is the league. It is doing what you've done today in this game at Molineux and replicating that. And if you do, you'll go as far as you want to go for the rest of the season. So he'd already, I mean, and we were talking in the midst of that euphoria, you know, literally within minutes of the final whistle, they've come back in on that incredible high for an incredible achievement. And the way that game finished, he's already bringing them back down. And because having gone so close last season, yes, the FA Cup is exciting, it's emotional, it's a roller coaster, but that club is now geared up to be in the Premier League. You know, they've obviously got the Norwich supporting, or formerly Norwich supporting owner in Doug King. Apparently he's made it quite clear that the bare minimum is now that two in every, I think it's three seasons in the Championship, they need to be in the top six. And if they fall below that, Robbins or whoever won't be in charge. So the pressure is on him to deliver. Not deliver a semi-final of an FA Cup, but to deliver Premier League football. And they went so close last season. And I'm sure that's fuel as well. You can imagine that, I mean, how do you even get over that in terms of your career, to get so close to the Premier League and then have it, you know, slip through your fingers or one penalty kick skied over the bar. And that has to be motivation. I'm sure when they came back for pre-season, the players who were still involved in the coaching staff, that sense of burning hurt, disappointment has fueled what they're doing this season. So, yeah, I don't see it being something that's, you can definitively say, right, well, that's them done for the playoffs now because they've got this FA Cup, because I think that's underestimating Mark Robbins and that group of players. But to take Adam's point, it has to have some bearing. I mean, I think Ewan wrote in his column for today, funnily enough, actually, yeah, we're recording on Friday. He's very close to Mark Robbins, I think, from their playing days at Norwich. And talked about his delight for what they'd achieved, but that, you know, ultimately it is about getting back to the Premier League, and that they won't be satisfied with, you know, an FA Cup trip to Wembley. They will want to be back there in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think it is a factor because, I mean, the point Ewan was sort of trying to make was if you're a player and you've got that on the horizon, there has to be something psychologically, just a fraction. I mean, the game before, if I look down, is Birmingham, which is a local derby, actually. So, you know, that, again, you have to treat that on its own merits. But if you're a Cov player, that day you get selected for Birmingham and you know you get injured in that game, you miss out potentially on Wembley. You know, whatever they would say externally, that has to be a factor. So, you know, I would think it would be the game or two prior to the semi-final, but thereafter, starting with Hull 3 days later, I mean, I didn't realise it was that big a game, that close. I think they'll be fully on it because, you know, I think with the greatest will in the world, I think that's where their FA Cup run will end against Manchester United, so they won't have the distraction of a, dare I say it, an FA Cup final to look forward to. So, full focus thereafter. But this side of that tie, yeah, I think it will be a slight factor. How much depends on how good a manager Mark Robins is.
I'm going to make an early prediction. I think they win the next three, which is Huddersfield away, Cardiff at home, and Leeds at home. I think they'll win all three. Yeah, particularly at home with the crowd, how it is at the moment. I actually think their problems might come afterwards, like you say, with the fixture congestion and, you know, having to then pick themselves up from what would be a semi-final defeat. And you know, they say, don't they, losing a semi-final is often worse than losing a final. Maybe that's slightly different for Cov because of their circumstances and the joyous nature of actually reaching it. We shall see. But I think actually the problems, because of how the games pile up, because of how thin their squad is, particularly in that wide left position where they've had to play Hadji Wright, haven't they, in recent weeks, I think that could become slightly problematic for them. And the way this is going to work is in the second half we're going to look more at kind of the historical, what Norwich City need to do, what the points are required, that kind of thing. But I just wanted to kind of finish on Sam part one with on that injury point, because we've seen actively, I think, at Norwich City how big a role it's played in their season. As I said earlier on, these run-ins, these type of things, when you're pushing for something, there is a certain part of that, a certain percentage of that, that is down to luck. And on all of these sides will need that. You know, Coventry without Sakamoto for the rest of the season, he's a major player. West Brom are without Daryl DK, Josh Madger, but they get them probably back in April. Liam Delap at Hull, he could be a major boost to what they're trying to do at some point in April when he returns. Preston have got a fair few out as well. So injuries and luck and fortune all plays a part in that. And that is the bit that I guess makes this race in particular so difficult to predict and nail down and say definitively. Because you say, you pluck Josh Sargent out of Norwich, it's a very different Norwich team that you start analysing. And that's the same for Hull if you take Philogene out of it. It's the same for Coventry if you take Hadji Wright out of it. It's the same for Preston if you take, Will Keane is their top scorer, but other players within that as well. I know McCann's very highly rated there. You could take players out of these teams and it radically changes the difficulty of the task ahead.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's also where maybe Norwich have one more positive and one more level to reach in this next couple of months. You look at that injury list, and although it has obviously impacted them at points this season, they've managed to get through most of this Rowe injury and most of Duffy's time out as well without obviously losing the momentum and the form that they showed when they were in the team, and even improving on maybe where they were when those injuries happened. And then you put them back into the mix at a crucial time. You've got, you know, Rowe, who's obviously their joint top scorer, Duffy, who at this level is a very good defender indeed, and you can tell from Wagner's team selections how much he trusts him. You know, Yiannoulis as well, who I know hasn't maybe had his best season at the club, but is at this level again another good technical operator. And it feels like, although there are obviously a lot of unpredictable elements, it's not just the injuries, it's, you know, a variety of different things, suspensions and whatever other things could come into it, but looking at what we already know, and you look at those lists of injuries and the players that could come back for these different sides, I think aside from maybe Delap coming back for Hull, which I think will be huge for them, you look
Rowe
at
for Norwich, would you put him in the same?
Yeah, well, this is what I mean. Yeah, I think Delap might be maybe the most out of that list, but next from there, Norwich look like they're in a fantastic position with the quality of players they've not now got coming back. So in a way, that feels to me like a positive if you're looking at the factors going into Norwich's run. I mean, and yeah, they're only really going to be without Ono Hernandez in that last sort of run-in. And if they've got John Rowe, who a lot of people are wondering how he's even going to get back into the team, which is an unbelievable situation to be in, by the way, then you suggest they should be covered in those forward areas and in those wide areas. So from a Norwich perspective, I think as long as they keep Sargent fit and, I don't know, there isn't some sort of Tottenham lasagna gate or whatever it was that goes on in that changing room, I think Norwich are actually in a fairly advantageous position when you look at that. And I reckon most of these teams will actually get better as the season goes on and with the time left and the actual chances of key players getting injured, it feels like the quality of those teams will improve. But yeah, I think I'd be looking at it from what we know certainly rather than what we can't predict as actually a positive for Norwich going into these last few games.
Lovely, and that I guess sums us up for part one, which is sort of a look in, I think, the various teams involved in the race. We'll go on from a more historical perspective in a moment, but whilst we sort of interlude and change between sections of this podcast, we try and obviously culturally enrich you whilst we're here. We've dabbled in food and historical monuments with Stonehenge earlier in this season. One topic that we haven't really delved in is music, which is going to change today because I got contacted, and of course we're always welcome for people to contact us all of our social channels or the old-fashioned use of email, or you can send a pigeon out and I'm sure it will find us with a message from a local artist called Sons of Mark, who have produced an excellent song which is about Norwich and not Norwich City necessarily. There's some Norwich City aspects to it, but it's about and it's called The Fine City, so that gives you an indication of what it's about. Now I listened to this, and the first time I listened to it when it was sent across, I thought, you know, Arsenal have what's it called? Is it North London Forever? Yeah. That one. You know, like the there's an anthem element to it, and there's been so much debate about atmosphere and all of this stuff at Carrow Road. So I'm going to paint you a scene, right? Just imagine we're sat in Carrow Road, whatever the date is, May the whatever. It's the semi-final first leg. Ipswich Town are the opponents. I just want you. We do a lot of segments that's actually probably better for video watchers rather than audio listeners. This is going to be better for audio listeners, I think. But just close your eyes, right? Picture, you know, the atmosphere. 5-10 minutes before kickoff, flags are waving, there's tension inside the ground, the teams are in the tunnel, this comes on over the PA system, and we're only going to play a minute of it, but just I think that probably encapsulates what it's about, and it's not about replacing On the Ball City either. So we're going to play a clip of it now, a 1 minute segment, and this is by Sons of Mark, and this is The Fine City. If it's not the hidden bruises on cobble streets, I need cathedral seen it all. The joys in 93, he crouched down the winsome on the way to Carrow Road. This is our fine city. It's a place we call our own. This is our welcome back to the Pinker.com Norwich City podcast, our top six countdown special recorded here at the Fat Cat and Canary in Norwich. And of course, this podcast sponsored by Coleman's of Norwich, which is pretty apt for the location we're in because there's some sort of, I'm going to historian Paddy Davitt here, but there's some sort of connection, isn't there?
Did a history degree.
Did you?
Not about the Fat Cat or Coleman's. Spent a lot of time in boozers in Manchester, but that's a different story. Yeah, I wish you hadn't put me on the spot there, Connor. I think it was the off the top of my head, apologies.
Wasn't it the
Fat Cat Canary was the name of one of the transport vehicles that got the old Coleman's factory used. Because it's only around the back here, isn't it?
Yeah.
It used to be, obviously, anybody who knows their Norwich geography. So how apt is that we're in a...
It was completely on purpose as well, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Everything we do is planned.
It is. And this sort of side of the conversation, we spoke a lot about the... the runners and riders, I guess, in the top six race. We're going to be speaking more about kind of the historical elements of it and maybe what's going to be required from a Norwich City perspective, but a general perspective as well. And actually, I think you look at last season, which is a really apt example, actually. It's the lowest points tally that is taken for a team to finish sixth. That was obviously Sunderland, and they had 69 points. That's the lowest points tally that any team inside the top six has recorded since the 12-13 season with 68 points. And I don't know who that was off the top of my head. I might have it written down here somewhere. It was Leicester in 2012-2013. So a little bit, I guess, of a standalone season. But actually, you look at the kind of broader picture and the average of points required. I think David Wagner said this in an interview recently, didn't he? That it was 74. I mean, the exact figure, not that I'm going to correct him, but the exact figure is 73.83 points. And again, I've got a very helpful graph in front of me that shows for sixth position, which I guess is probably where we're having a lot of this conversation, but I will read the numbers out for fifth in a moment as well, because obviously that's still in play from a Norwich perspective for the time being. The maximum points that a team has taken and finished sixth is 80, minimum 68. As we said, that was Leicester. On average, you've needed 73.83 points, obviously 74 if you're into rounding up and mathematics. For fifth, the highest place fifth finish was 83 points, which might have been David Wagner's Huddersfield team. No, I think he got 81. But so that's the highest for a fifth place finish. The minimum that anyone has ever finished fifth with is exactly. I did choose to ignore it. I had it written down and chose to ignore it. And I think Kov actually finished with 70. So they've the lowest fifth place points return. That was last season. Yeah. This is a slightly outdated graphic. I don't think it incorporates last season, but it is Coventry. And then on average, it's 76 points for a fifth place finish. So that's sort of the numbers that you're dabbling in. Norwich, of course, as we said, currently sitting on 61. So, it gives it around 14, 15 points that they would need to finish in sixth from their final eight games or so. But even then, Sam, I mean, you look at, let's take the last 5 years, for example. 18-19, 74 points was the number for a sixth place finish. 19-20, it was 70. 2021, it was 77, so particularly high that year. 21-22 was 75, so about around the numbers that we've been talking about. And last year, it was at 69. Barring a complete disaster from the teams involved, I don't think we're going to be looking at a 69-point sixth place finish. I think it is going to be higher than that. But it shows even getting to the average, as David Wagner, I think, to be fair, said, Sam, might not necessarily be enough for Norwich City. So in terms of pure maths, I guess from their perspective, it's probably about setting maybe bigger targets, setting any targets at all.
Yeah, I mean, if you are setting targets, and like you say, it's very much a psychological debate as to whether you just try and pick up as many points as possible or you set a target for the team to try and reach. But it feels like, to me, it might be quite close to the average, because obviously 69, I think, is that's 1.5 points per game, isn't it? And Norwich are tracking, they've got 61.
They're all averaging slightly more than that.
So they're just over it. So it feels like it will be higher than 69, and you take into consideration the importance of these last few games, and teams do tend to pick up their output in the last few games when they're trying to achieve something, especially at the top end of the table. So it feels like it will be in and around the average. But if you are setting targets, obviously you go for not a ridiculously high one that's going to demotivate people, but one that probably is more of a safe estimation than saying, you know, reach 74 and you'll be safe, because it feels like with the quality of these teams at this moment in time and the momentum that there is in a lot of these teams going into the last few games, it will be in and around that or even higher. So I think although Wagner has quoted that, he will certainly be pushing for more than that. And I think the more interesting decision for him is, as you said, you know, deciding between do you set that points target and give the players something tangible to aim for, or do you just say get as many points as possible? Because it's definitely two very different outlooks on things. And although the players can obviously view things privately themselves in different ways, the way that the dressing room this season has been, they tend to be together. So that'll be a big motivational decision for Wagner to make. Obviously, I'm not expecting it's one that he'll reveal in public. But I think the way that they approach these and the psychology going into the amount of points available between now and the end of the season could actually play quite a big role in whether they get there or not.
Yeah, and we spoke earlier about kind of the form that the teams are in. Just from a purely Norwich perspective, 2 points per game in the last 10 games. If they can maintain that over the last eight, 16 more points, that would put them on 77. That would be enough, in all of the last 6 years, really. But only once in the last 6 years has that target, I guess, been the number that the sixth place team has got. So that goes into kind of and lends itself to the conversation that we were speaking about earlier, Adam, and again, it's going to be slightly difficult, I think, because of that Leicester-Ipswich doubleheader that we spoke about. But if they can keep in and around that points rate, it probably backs up what we said earlier, that they're in the box seat, that they're able to do it. Obviously, football doesn't work like that, and things can change, and people can get injured. But from a Norwich City target perspective, do you feel that has to be more of the target, maintaining that 2 points per game ratio rather than looking at points tallies and trying to hit things that way?
Yeah, I think, you know, if they do maintain what they're sort of averaging at the moment, then yeah, that will be enough to secure it, given that the teams around them face each other, whole play Coventry, so they, you know, one or if not both of those teams will drop points on that occasion. And, you know, I spoke about goal difference earlier on. I mean, that's kind of worth an extra point to Norwich. I know Coventry are very similar to Norwich in terms of goal difference, but certainly to Hull, Norwich have kind of got the extra point buffer given the goal difference dynamic. So yeah, I think that's absolute bare minimum. In my head, it's if we're going to put it on a win ratio, I think five wins probably does the job, just because of the nature of, you know, the teams facing each other and the fact that these other teams have got a bit more fixture congestion because they have the extra game to play in hand, which, you know, we spoke about the psychology of that at the start of the show. So yeah, I think it's difficult. It's up to David Wagner how he wants to approach it. He's been in this situation before with Huddersfield, obviously slightly different in that they finished a little bit higher up in the table, but he'll know sort of the mindset and the mentality he needs to get to these players, and it is just literally purely continuing what you're doing, lads. You know, my fear at the start was that they'd kind of peaked a little bit too early, but it almost feels like they've actually peaked at the completely right time. They've kind of got those really tough fixtures out of the way with, they got the points they required, and now it's just about not slipping up against sides that on paper they probably should get the results against. You know, Plymouth at home, you know, we know what happened there previously in terms of the reverse game. It's now just kind of using that as motivation and fuel to say, look, let's get one back over them and get the result we require. And I think get the win in that game, and then it maybe eases a little bit of pressure then heading into that double header, which is so big. But come out the other side of that and you're still right in it, then I think it's not just to lose. If they lose it, then it'll be from their own doing more than other sides around them, you know, picking up their form and sort of overcoming Norwich, because they would be the team who, you know, would be setting the pace and the team to chase. And I know kind of you spoke to, well, we were both there, but we spoke to Christoph Buhler about it, kind of the chase element of it, and he kind of always referenced it more as like a pack of teams, and, you know, Norwich are the team in the box seat. They haven't really kind of got to worry about those other results, as David Wagner's kind of alluded to, that it is purely on them now. So yeah, it's 2 points per game, or it's five wins in my head, if you kind of depend on which metric fans or coaches or players would rather use.
Would you go along with that, Paddy? Because as you said, we've got a list of all of the points needed for playoffs since the 07-08 season. It doesn't feel, as I said, to me like it's going to be a, you know, 70-71 sort of point job. I think we're going to be looking sort of mid-70s, aren't we? High 70s possibly. Is that where your head is kind of at from a Norwich City perspective, five from eight in terms of wins?
Well, on that measure, I mean, you'd add that 15 points to the 61 they've already got. That'd take them to 76, and now I'm looking down there, and 76 would have been good enough in five of the last six seasons. So, empirically, in a more recent sample, you would say, yes, that gets the job done. But then, as Adam was talking there, I'm thinking, where are these five wins coming from? So that's my natural pessimism kicking in. Increasingly, my mind's eye is drawn to that Leicester-Ipswich doubleheader, if you want to call it, that Easter doubleheader. You know, if they...
Let's phrase this quick. How many points do you think they need from that doubleheader? Because can they afford to lose them both in the race that they're in?
I don't think so, no. Not so much in terms of the points damage, that there wouldn't be enough game time and points available to still recover. It's the psychological element of it again, isn't it? To feel you've got that momentum, and then, and of course, added to that, the whole historical derby curse lifted element to it as well. You know, even as much you would think it maybe inside the camp, that wouldn't matter as much as outside with the fan base. That would permeate for me. So that would be, yeah, that would be the nightmare scenario if they didn't win, if they got beaten both of those games, or maybe only drew one of them. I think I'd take 3 points from those two games. So in other words, I'd be quite happy. Quite happy to lose to Leicester and then beat Ipswich, yeah. But more psychologically, I think, to not win either of those two and heaven forbid, to get beat by Ipswich. I think that would be a real mental challenge for that group of players and that head coach and his staff. But but if they, conversely, if they come pick up a win out of those two, then I think they coast to the top six. Then I think they pick up the other wins they need in the remaining fixtures without too many alarms, actually. But it's just feels that could be the momentum stopper. But conversely, you get 4 points, dare to dream, you get 6 points, then it's get the hotel booked for Wembley, I think.
I will say, just on the five wins number, I agree with Pad that the psychological element of, well, especially Ipswich, really would be a lot to get over. But if you take out Leicester, Ipswich and Preston, then it's Plymouth, Sheffield Wednesday, Swansea, Bristol City and Birmingham. And you look at that last five games that really they will think they should be winning. So for me, if they win all the games that you'd quote-unquote say they should be winning and then even get a point against Ipswich, and for me, I think the main thing for the fan base is keeping that historical run going. I think that would be, that for me would be the simplest route to the playoffs, would be to win all the games that you think they should, and then to avoid the psychological harm of an Ipswich defeat. But I mean, a win would be fantastic, but even getting a draw there, I think they'd be in a pretty good position.
I know it's not particularly mainstream view as of yet. I think it could become some. I know obviously a lot of the attention's been on the Leicester Ipswich doubleheader. I actually think the Wednesday Preston double away game in what, four days or so, that's big as well for obviously Wednesday, much improved, particularly at home. That relegation race being more bonkers than this, and thank God Norwich aren't a part of that, because we wouldn't have enough table space for the sheets of paper we would need, I think, in that type of scenario. But you can already see a scenario where they are very G'd up for that game, and there's so much riding on that. Preston, as we spoke about earlier, is going to be a big game psychologically for them, particularly if they can get maybe the results that their fixtures suggest they might be able to in the next four, with obviously the caveat of the running that they've got. That could be really tough for Norwich to record two wins, as you've mapped out, Sam. And the irony, I guess, of all of this, Adam, is for Ipswich, I guess, on two parts. Partly because that game on April the 6th, as we've already said, could be a dry run for the playoffs. It is, as in current standings, that would be, if you ended the season today, the playoff in question, which is, oh, God, not great. But more so on the point that Ipswich are likely going to have a big say in this playoff race, because you look and you go down the fixtures, and Hull's final three games, Coventry away, big for its own reasons. They then play Ipswich at home before ending it on Plymouth away. Coventry have Ipswich at home as well, so both of those teams have Ipswich at home. They're going to have a big say in terms of where Norwich City potentially end up. Hopefully it's all done and dusted by then, and we can, you know, be looking ahead to the playoff semi-finals. But there is a scenario where they have a big role to play, and that's going to be quite odd, isn't it, for the mindset of both sets of fans, I think.
Yeah, I think I can't think of many occasions where Norwich would be, you know, kind of hoping for an Ipswich win. That's not really a thought I even want to get into my head, to be honest. But obviously, if it comes to it, then you've kind of got to back it. At the end of the day, you're focused on Norwich, and thankfully, hopefully, by that point, you know, Leeds and Leicester might have pulled away by Ipswich, so you'd less inclined to worry that they're going to win, because they'll still be in the playoff mix. And I sent you a stat earlier, actually. I think Ipswich are the most contested team in the Championship playoffs, if you go equivalent as well. Obviously, it hasn't been named the Championship for forever, but they've played in eight times. They've only ever been promoted once and made the final once, so they've had seven semi-final defeats. So if Norwich City make it and they're in sixth place and Ipswich are third, then you know, obviously these things are there to be broken, so I don't want to look stupid, but Norwich have done it before, and I'd back them to do it again. So, you know, maybe there's that element there psychologically, back them to win, and then we'll just do the job in the semi-final and reach Wembley, and, you know, their sort of season of gloating can come to an end.
Oh, that clip's going to be on that. What's that Twitter account?
Yeah,
that's the one. I'm going to be seeing that clip on there, I feel. Hopefully not in a few months. But it is, I mean, around the sort of congestion of games point, Paddy, it is... in Norwich's favour, really, that aspect of it as well. We spoke about points. I mean, you what did you say, LS 73? You had them finishing on, roughly. If they're already 2 points ahead of that, we've spoken about maybe what they'll need. So maybe now comes to the point where each of us will speak about where we think they will end up. So let's start with you. I appreciate I put you on the spot a little bit more. The other two guys have got a little bit of thinking time, but where do you see that points tally now? Is it much different from how you said? And I guess the crucial question, is that going to be enough for a top six finish?
Phil, for 2 minutes there, Connor, because I'll call up what I actually came up with, because I took a
I won't even take that.
It's here now. Here we go. So this was, bearing in mind, pre-Stoke, so I thought a draw.
Yeah.
Beat Plymouth, lose to Leicester.
Beat Ipswich.
Draw at Wednesday, lose to Preston. And then 7 points from the remaining game. So that would have equated with a draw at Stoke, sorry, to 73.
So put them on 75.
75.
Is that enough for a top six finish for you?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, because of all the overlay that we've sort of mapped out in this discussion, you know, Hull playing Cov, there's points got to be, you know, taken off each other there. You throw Ipswich into the mix as well. Preston. Yeah, Preston playing Norwich. So, and West Brom on the final day, I noticed. So, yeah, I think 75 gets the job done. And historically, 75 and five of the last six seasons would get the job done. Yeah,
you'd be pretty unlucky to get 75 and not finish in the top six. Sam, if you I come to you next in terms of, you know, five wins is what we think they'll need from eight to definitively do it. Four plus a couple of draws might prove enough in the end. You similar to Paddy? What points have you got them on, and is that enough for a top six finish?
I think 16, would be 77, wouldn't it? Which would put them in a fantastic position in terms of qualification. I think they'll beat Plymouth, and then I'm choosing to go into the Leicester Ipswich doubleheader a little bit negative, because I think that's probably the best way to prepare. Taking a point from one of those two, obviously I very much hope it would be Ipswich. Then actually I can see them losing to Sheffield Wednesday, but I've got this funny feeling that they'll go to Preston and get a win. I don't know if it's the sort of muscle memory from obviously going there and winning 4-0 in David Wagner's first championship game last season, but I've got a funny feeling about that one. And then Swansea at home, Bristol at home, Birmingham away. If you're a team that wants to get into the playoffs, then you have to be winning all three of those, I think. So, yeah, I feel like I've gone with a very positive end to the season with four wins. I think they will struggle with that Leicester, Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday away. I think, yeah, that's all in the space of 8 or 9 days, isn't it? So, yeah, I think as long as they can get over whatever psychologically comes up in those three games, I think they'll put themselves in a pretty good position for the end of the season. So, yeah, I think 16, 77 points, comfortably qualifying. But, yeah, again, I will say mine wasn't quite as destructive as Adam's rant there, so I should be safe now. But, yeah, again, I'm worried about how it looks in a couple of months. But, yeah, for now, I'll choose to be positive.
This whole podcast could be there, couldn't it? And that's that's the glorious nature of it. I think I've got them for 14, I think, but my maths isn't very good, so I'll show my working. Plymouth, I think they'll win that game. I think they'll lose at Leicester, draw against Ipswich, draw at Wednesday, lose at Preston, beat Swansea, beat Bristol City, beat Birmingham, 14. So that would have them on 75, and I think that would be enough to get them in. Adam, you're going for wins across the board. Not a chance dropping
eight
a point.
Eight
wins in a row. Yeah, top two, why not?
Forever the optimist, but I can see five wins, to be honest. I think they beat Plymouth, they lose at Leicester, beat Ipswich. I think they beat Sheffield Wednesday, lose at Preston. I just think given the home form element, by that point, they're probably going to lose one of the two home games because their run at the moment at Carrow Road is far too good. Hopefully they don't, but I think one of those two home games they lose, and then they beat Birmingham on the final day, which is enough to get them into the playoffs. They're unbeaten against Ipswich, and then they're full of confidence heading to whoever they face in the playoff semi. So, yeah, they finish sixth, which is, at the end of the day, I don't really care how many points they get as long as they finish in that sixth place.
There
I
you
love
go.
How quickly Adam Harvey has become public enemy number one in Suffolk. Fantastic.
Yeah, we're not going to be getting accreditation next time, are we? But hey-ho, such is life. So I think we've all concluded that at this stage, we think Norwich are going to get in the top six, which is remarkable, considering some of the debates that we've had on this podcast this season, and shows just, I guess, points to the turnaround and the significance of what they've done. And yeah, that's hopefully a relatively comprehensive look at how we think things are going to unfold, about how they could unfold. Obviously, Norwich could completely collapse, lose their next four games, and it could be done by April the 10th. But let's hope that's not the case. Unlikely to be the case. You would hope anyway from this Norwich City group. Obviously, we'll be at Carrow Road on Good Friday for that game against Plymouth. We'll have a podcast, I think. We haven't discussed this yet, so I'm bringing this into the room for the first time. Are we going to do it after the Easter games? Are we going to do it during the Easter games after Plymouth as we normally would? Maybe we'll have a think about that and come to. Or you can tell us what you want. Do you want one after both of the Easter games?
None.
Yeah, that's acceptable as well. Let us know what you'd like in terms of podcast. We'll either do one after Plymouth or after Leicester. I'd imagine we might do one after Leicester because I think that will make more sense. Yeah, we'll see. But Paddy, it's been an international break, and usually, yeah, we'll offer them a peek behind the curtain. These can be quite tricky times for us in terms of finding content, but we've got quite a few things for people to watch, to read, to enjoy over this period. So let's tell them what we've got coming up, what we've had, and all of that stuff.
No, it's been, yeah, obviously we're biased, but I think if you're a Norwich fan, you've had some decent content for a change from us this week without any game cycle. I mean, you boys were at Dereham on Monday for the fans forum with Zoe Webber and Johnny Rowe and Shane Duffy, so you know, we brought those interviews there, and Sam and Adam were down at the women's presser at Colney on
big game on
Wednesday.
Sunday,
huge, yeah, yeah, good luck to them. You know, Carrow 5,000 tickets, yeah, and climbing QPR's women, so you know, that was great because, you know, we like to be able to have more touch points, but the nature of the work cycle we're on with obviously you know, following David Wagner and his squad, that doesn't always allow.
George,
yeah, he does, yeah, yeah. We still try and bring the level of coverage that we can around all the games, home or away, without fail. But you spoke to Manu Adeboyega, who's doing some good things at Walsall, very young, highly rated, you know, potential player who could be in the mix from next season onwards, out on loan. I think we can probably say that you might be Sutton bound this weekend, Connor, to take in two more of the stable, i.e. Lewis Shipley and Brad Hills are doing good things with Accrington. So touch wood, hopefully we'll get a nice chat with those guys, or you will.
Bowling train problems, which is always a problem.
Yeah, there's no strikes, is there? But I mean, by the time this goes out, actually, if we're planning to put this out a bit later today, but over the weekend we've managed to have a sit down with Mr. Stuart Webber. So
he hates us, doesn't he?
Well, he's obviously forgotten. That was good. I went and had a chat with him earlier in the week, 40 minutes worth of very insightful stuff, I thought, and no stone left unturned. Obviously, he's, you know, technically passed the baton on to Ben Napper back in November. We all remember that Cardiff weekend and Adam Eder and the Guard of Honour, but officially that notice period ends next week, and then he's no longer attached to Norwich in any way, shape or form. He's got his crime, he's heading off to Everest April the 22nd. So yeah, we went and had a good chat with him about that, about his charity, the Summit Foundation, and giving, you know, you young people in Norfolk better life chances. Him and his wife set up 2 years ago, so, which is part of the, you know, the fundraising effort around the charity, around the mountain effort, and some really intriguing stuff. Very reflective as well on his time at Norwich, and you know, to bring it forward, you know, what he thinks about Norwich moving forward and his own next job, whether that's in football or not. So that's just a little, you know, heads up. We'll hopefully have the audio. Adam's worked wonders with the audio quality, given it was in a very noisy coffee house in Norwich. So all sorts of coffee machines going off in the background. But hopefully people will persevere a little bit with the lack of quality of audio for the insight from a guy who was never anything other than compelling whenever he spoke in front of the media. Not always to his advantage, which he acknowledges. You know, as I say, it's very as reflective as I've seen him, and as well as I've seen him actually. And he touches on that in terms of his health, you know, and just what the process he went through when he actually stopped work in November, and maybe allowed him to reassess with a degree of detachment. So yeah, no, well worth a listen, and obviously the content will be out there. From we'll have a piece up later on today, Friday afternoon, and then tomorrow we'll have some more serious, substantial pieces of content. So all in all, and then obviously Sam's down at the game on Sunday at Carr Road, so you're not going to go short. And you know, as we sit here drinking out of pink and branded glasses, it's probably worth reiterating, we've much appreciated that the, you know, there is that support of our platforms, and that they get consumed to a degree to allow us to sit here in a pub on a Friday afternoon and have a drink. So long may that continue.
Yeah, and I will close with this is I'm going a bit David Wagner against Watford here, but I don't want to say it's a gripe, but what I tell you what I'd like to say, we don't get a lot of this. We don't get I don't want to say, maybe I'm opening a can of worms here, but I don't know if feedback's the right word. But if you listen to the pod and you know like the pod, really appreciate it if you could share it somewhere and talk about how wonderful it is. And if you don't, then don't worry about it. It's fine. Forget about what I said.
They wouldn't be watching or listening if they didn't like it, surely. Why else would you waste an hour with us?
It would be good if you could do that for us, and that would be much appreciated. But that seems like a nice place to leave it. Thank you all very much for watching, if you have done on YouTube, and we always put our podcasts out on YouTube every week. And of course, if you've got us in your ear holes in audio form as well, that's much appreciated. And we will see you at some point over the Easter weekend for the next show. See you soon.